This is me telling you this. The program is Media Network.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archive.
By shortwave, medium wave, satellite, and the World Wide Web, this is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Multimedia Network, a survey of new and traditional technology connecting across borders. This edition is produced and presented by Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and despite the warm weather outside, quite a lot of people are paying attention to this wireless show, judging at least from a wave of reactions we had to comments in last week's Media Network. Emails, of course, came in first, and we've just been handed the first few letters, which have reached us via snail mail. More later in the show, but first to the news.
Safety officials in the US are studying the navigational black boxes to determine the final moments of the Korean Airlines Boeing 747, which smashed into a jungle-covered hill on Guam on Wednesday. Later on Wednesday evening, we reach Glenn Sheng, who's assistant news director at KTWR in Guam, a religious station, because from the news video, it looked as if the plane came down very near to their shortwave radio station. So, was that the case?
Well, actually, the plane crashed several kilometers from a shortwave facility, and we do have offices and then a medium wave station, and that was just a couple of kilometers away from the crash site.
So, no damage to the station nor to the facilities?
No, actually, the crash was diverted to a very remote area that the pilot chose not to choose any populated areas, and we find this very fortunate for our station. I would say calming down. We've had a whole day of busy activity, and I think it's just starting to hit home of the magnitude of the crash and also the great loss of life.
Glenn Sheng on the line from Guam.
Now to a quick question from the answer line. So, who have we got?
Hello, Diana. This is James Robinson in Birkenhead, England. On the evening of Wednesday, the 30th of July, Summer TV on Channel 102 in MPEG was soft encrypted. Now, I was under the impression that this channel was supposed to be in the clear. If there has been a change of plan, I'd like to know about it.
Thanks, James. I like the music in the background. Well, there is no change of plan. What you witnessed was a coding mistake somewhere in the transmission chain. The Dutch domestic TV channels, Nederland 1, 2 and 3, are encoded for copyright reasons. But Radio Netherlands Sommer TV in both analog and digital is free to air.
By the way, James, the Dutch domestic radio channels on Astra also encrypted for copyright reasons, also because the target audience is inside the Netherlands. Radio Netherlands Dutch Service is the channel designed for Dutch speakers living abroad. It has a different content, and it's programmed to take account of different time zones.
In receiver news, the International Center for Humanitarian Reporting in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in the USA, passes on the results of two major field tests of the Bajan Free Play Radio. These have been undertaken by the BBC Afghan Education Drama Project in Afghanistan and the Cranfield Disaster Preparedness Center in Eritrea.
Each of the tests was designed to find out whether the clockwork radio, which we featured on Media Network in the past, in fact we've got one in front of us right now, whether it matches up to expectations and durability claims that we've seen widely quoted in the press in many parts of the world. Well, in Afghanistan, the AED Evaluation Department decided that by distributing some of the radios to women, it would ensure not only that women had access to the radio in what is traditionally a male-dominated society, but that it would at least deter men from selling or removing the radio from the home. The evaluation team selected households and showed people how to use the set, and then 8 months later they managed to trace 32 of the original 50 recipients and invited them to join discussion groups with their radio sets.
Meanwhile, in Eritrea, a larger distribution operation was undertaken by the Cranfield University Disaster Preparedness Center, who had 304 Bajan radios donated to their project by the British government at the start of last year. Most of the radios went to listening centres, where villagers can gather and listen to educational programmes in an organised manner. Another 44 sets were distributed to as wide a spectrum of people as possible by means of competitions, which were widely publicized on the radio and also in the press, in which Bajan radios were the prizes. 25 of the original 44 people who won radios were visited in their homes in different locations throughout the country and interviewed.
So much for the facts and figures. What about the findings? Well, there were generally few complaints in Afghanistan or Eritrea concerning the appearance or the weight of the clockwork radio. People also were impressed with the fact that it doesn't require batteries or an outside power supply, so therefore it didn't cost anything to run. In Afghanistan, most users remembered well how to use it, demonstrating correctly the clockwise method of winding it up. This seems to have been a problem in Eritrea, though. 7 out of the 25 radios examined had a broken spring because the owner had tried to wind it up the wrong way round. 2/3 of the Afghan radios had damaged winding handles, as did almost half of the radios in the sample from Eritrea.
On a more positive note, of those radios used in formal settings, such as schools and listening centres, most were working well because they had been specially looked after. It was clear that people with the Bajan radio were not scanning the dial looking for new stations, but they were listening longer hours to their favourite channels because it removed the financial worry of purchasing batteries. The lack of any form of dial light was seen as a disadvantage too, because if you have no electric power at all, tuning the radio at night is rather hit and miss. The lack of shortwave coverage in the 19-meter band was also a problem, since international broadcasters use that wave band during the daylight hours, and with sunspots rising slowly, that trend is set to continue for some years to come.
In general, then, the two reports conclude that while there's obvious work to do on the design of the clockwork radio to make it more robust, particularly the winding handle, the Bajan radio was a large step in the right direction. But there's no local repair service in Afghanistan or Eritrea, so any broken sets remain out of use.
And it's hoped that by buying in larger quantities, prices can come closer to levels that average people can afford. At the moment, import duties on the sets, which are made in South Africa, are still a major stumbling block.
Well, we move to more tuning tips now. Joining us on the line from Colombo is Victor Gunatilaka. Victor, Sri Lanka has areas with no electricity. Have you seen the clockwork radio available in the shops where you are?
Unfortunately, not, Jonathan, but having seen the clockwork radio when I was in Amsterdam for towards 2000, I think it'll have an excellent future in Sri Lanka. Batteries are expensive even here, and in certain parts of the country which is under the ethnic conflict, there is no electricity at all, and things like the Bajan wound-up radio will really serve the people.
Okay, to news now. And a while back we mentioned that the non-governmental Tamil language station based in London was starting a series of test transmissions to South Asia. Former members of the BBC World Service have started a station called IBC from the studios of the World Radio Network in South London.
நேரம் சரியாக அதிகாலை 3 மணி 40 நிமிடம் நீங்கள் கேட்டுக்கொண்டிருப்பது அஸ்ட்ரா சேட்டலைட் வழியாக ஐரோப்பா முழுவதும் வந்து கொண்டிருக்கும் ஐபிசி தமிழ் வானொலி.
The Sri Lankan government expressed concerns in May that that station might be very political. Victor, what's happened since?
Well, Jonathan, the test broadcast didn't continue. So if the government was watching, they didn't hear anything very much after the first 2 or 3 weeks. Well, the test transmissions came from Dushanbe, Tajikistan, but the signal was not adequate enough for even fair reception here in South Asia. Well, the IBC is going to test again later this week, and this time between 13:30 and 14:30 UTC, that's 13:30 to 14:30, on 15075 kilohertz. That's 15075 kilohertz. The transmitting will be from Tbilisi in Georgia, and they expect the reception will be much better in South Asia.
And we understand that Georgia is also being used by the High Adventure Ministries.
Yes, Jonathan, that's right, because the High Adventure Ministries, Voice of Hope, introduced a broadcast to South Asia between 1400 and 1600 UTC. That's a two-hour English broadcast. And the frequency, 12120 kHz, 12120 kHz, that's outside the 25 meter band. Reception was excellent initially, but the station seems to be having problems with the transmitter, and the audio quality is giving quite a lot of problems here in South Asia. Reception is not too good. I understand the transmitter is a former jamming transmitter from the Soviet era, so maybe the modulation is not excellent.
It didn't have to sound so good in those days, did it? It just had to make a lot of noise. What else is new?
Well, Radio Thailand gives excellent reception and modulation thanks to their relay agreement with the Voice of America from the relay station at Udon Thani. Reception is excellent, midnight 30 to 1 hour UTC, and the frequency 15395. This broadcast is beamed to North America, and it replaces frequency of 15370. Although it's beamed to North America, reception is excellent here in South Asia. Well, in the meantime, for DXs looking for Thailand of more challenge than the VOA transmitters, the domestic service on shortwave is heard on their own low-power transmitters on 4830 kHz. That's 4830 kHz in the 60-meter band and 6070 kHz. Both transmitters carry the same domestic Thai program. Reception is pretty good here in South Asia between 1100 and 1700 UTC.
Talking of very good reception, I note that RRI Jakarta, with its external service, the Voice of Indonesia, is being heard quite well here in Europe at the moment, around 18 hours UTC in German on 9525 kHz. What about a tip from your part of the world again?
Well, the Voice of Tibet will, in the very near future, introduce a morning broadcast to Tibet, and the time slot will be 2230 to 2300 UTC, the frequency 7120 kHz. Recent test broadcast indicated excellent reception here in South Asia and also in parts of Tibet. Their regular broadcast in the meantime continues 1225 to 1255 UTC on the frequency of 11570. That's 11570, and a possible morning broadcast in the near future between 2230 and 2300. And the frequency then 7120 kHz.
But Victor, it's important to point out that the Voice of Tibet is actually targeting listeners in Tibet. It's not actually coming from Tibet.
Yes, sir, that's right, Jonathan, because this is a voice for Tibetans from outside Tibet, from the Dalai Lama and the Tibetan community in India. So they use the transmitters of FEBA in the Seychelles, but after protests from the Chinese government, FEBA stopped carrying the programs of Voice of Tibet. So it has to be from some other transmitting site now.
Anything coming in from the African continent where you are?
Well, yes, Jonathan, around June, July, and up to about September, African reception is very good here in South Asia. And we are surprised to hear the reactivated Bujumbura, Burundi, and the frequency 6140 kHz, 6140 kHz. The station is heard signing on this frequency 6140. And the same frequency is used by the BBC for its Tamil service. So if you locate the Tamil service of the BBC, that's from 1545 to 1615, you'll hear the Bujumbura transmitter underneath the BBC. That's 6140 kHz. Programming, of course, is in the vernacular languages, but at 1745, there is an English broadcast from Bujumbura. It's a news broadcast. The frequency, again, 6140.
And what about from the French-speaking part of the continent?
Yes, Chad, excellent reception from Chad, and the frequency 4904 kHz, 4904. Reception is really excellent here in South Asia. Unfortunately, we have no English transmissions from Chad, But the vernacular programming and especially the music coming from this African station is really worth listening. Reception is best after 1700 when the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation signs off on 4900, just 4 kilohertz up. So after the SLBC leaves 4900, or that's 4900, Chad comes in on 4904 with excellent music.
Coming soon on Media Network, we visit the Berlin Audio and Video Fair to find out what happens when DAB finally meets the consumer. We start a series of book reviews on radio-related publications. And next week is the big special on offshore radio. Check the website after this broadcast for all the details. Oh, look, here comes somebody else.
Indeed, it's a letter from M.V. Kunarji, who lives in Bombay in India. He's been exploring the internet since his company got connected about 3 months ago. He challenges the accuracy of our technical documents on the web, which he's been comparing to the BBC World Service Receiver Guide, prominently displayed on their homepage.
The BBC Guide says that most radios are marked in meters and that the 22-meter band is necessary. Only older models show the bands in megahertz. It also points out that shortwave fade-outs are caused by sunspot activity, but argues that the sunspot activity will decrease from 1997 onwards. Mr. Kunarji says we should correct our texts because we say different things. Well, on this occasion, we're going to agree to differ. Most of the sets in our market surveys show kilohertz on the dial rather than meters, including all the radios made in the Far East.
Locally made radios in India often show meters, it's true, but we would recommend that you pick a set that includes the 22-meter broadcast band because reception there of some European stations in particular is probably better than on the more crowded 25 and 19-meter bands.
As to the sunspot story, well, the number can only go up rather than decrease. There are so few spots on the sun at the moment, we're getting phone calls to the answer line asking where they've all gone. We were supposed to be having more by now. Mike Bird from Melbourne is on the line with an explanation.
Jonathan, I can confirm that the solar minimum took place back in May 1996 when the yearly average sunspot number dropped to 8.2. Since then, it has risen very slowly. The latest yearly average sunspot number we have is for January 1997 when it had reached 10.7. The prediction we have for August 1997 is around the 20 mark. But as you and your listeners will know, the solar flux and the corresponding sunspot numbers have been very low these past few months. So we expect that when the numbers for August are published early next year, they won't reach the prediction. We expect that it will be around, say, 17 or 18. What I can say is that the sunspot numbers for cycle 23 are climbing very slowly. In fact, cycle 23 is looking to be one of the slowest risers on record.
So when are those higher frequencies, run about, let's say, 21 and even 25 megahertz, going to start propagating again?
Well, Jonathan, we're looking at around at least 12 months before the X-ray and ultraviolet output from the sun will increase significantly. So what this means is that it will take at least 12 months before the ionosphere will be able to support those higher frequencies, particularly during local night time.
Now, normally the sunspot cycle works that it goes up very quickly over a period of 4 years to a sort of a peak and then takes 7 years to decline. If we take that as a sort of rule of thumb, does that mean to say that 4 years from now we're going to have the sunspot maximum?
Well, anything can happen, Jonathan, but the best minds in the world recently met in Boulder and they have announced that the window for the maximum period will open in January 1999 and go through to June 2001, with maximum taking place around March 2000. And the level they expect that cycle 23 will get to will range between a low of 130 and a high of 190, and they reckon that the maximum sunspot number will reach about 160.
Mike, thanks for the background. We'll talk to you later in the programme. Back to that BBC website, because it is worth exploring further. Dennis Johnson, who's the web editor for BBC Five Live, says that this UK national radio station has started broadcasting its news and current affairs output live on the World Wide Web, initially for 5 days a week. For UK sports fans living abroad, this may be a convenient alternative to BBC World Service, providing you don't live too far outside the UK time zone. The URL is www.bbc.co.uk/Radio 5, and Radio 5 in this case is all one word.
Two other sites are worth a mention. Dr. Martin van der Ven lives in Germany, but appears to spend a great deal of his time in the Netherlands. He follows the offshore broadcasting scene very closely and has a vast archive of photos. He's helped us compile a webpage with the Media Network suggested links to offshore radio. If you follow the suggestions, you'll be more than adequately briefed in time for next week's program. The URL is simply www.rnw.nl.
And in the US, another site has posted clips of famous disc jockeys of the past. If you have a sound card, check out www.realradio, and real is spelled realradio.com. Which has all the voices of the late Gary Gears of WLS and Radio Moscow fame, Scotty Brink of Super CFL, and the legendary Jeff Fox WBT jingle. So there you have it, detail to while away the evening hours. If you like that sort of thing, and we do, ladies and gentlemen, some of us actually do.
Coming soon. The DX-Files. Strange, unpredictable phenomena bounce through the ionosphere. Hey, who says we can't cash in on a cult?
Some items in brief from the August issue of Monitoring Times, published by Grove Enterprises, has an in-depth feature on Radio Netherlands and our anniversary. Their website is www.grove.net. And the competing magazine in the US, Popular Communications, also started a website for its readers. That's at www.popcom.com. And note that popcom is all one word, and it's spelt with two M's. Otherwise, you hit a very different site. Arthur Cushion is next with more tuning tips logged in the Pacific.
Moving to Hawaii, KWHR is installing its second transmitter in the 100-kilowatt unit. The new one will be used exclusively 24 hours a day for China and Asian area, and the old transmitter, which came into force in 1993, is going to be 24 hours to the South Pacific. Moldova, the broadcast heard in English 0330 on 7520, and Tajikistan, we're hearing this one at English at 0345, and their frequency is 11620. Ankara, Turkey, they have three transmissions to this area, 0300, 0400 on 15190. From 12:30 to 13:30, it's on 13790. And the other one is 2200 to 2300, that's on 9560 kilohertz. Western Samoa, they used to have a station called 2AP Apia in the old days. The government have just signed a decree changing the name just to Samoa. According to the consultation with American Samoa, they had the idea that you're an independent country, you please yourself. So they've decided to call themselves Samoa, and we will be hearing them on only medium wave, 540 and 747 kilohertz, so the two frequencies used by ARPI at the moment.
And is this call sign still the same?
No, the call sign was allocated by the New Zealand government, and since independence there's no call sign being used. Stations in Europe, still interesting in the South Pacific. Croatia, they're 0900 to 1100 on 9470. Malta is another country beaming programs to the South Pacific on Sunday, 0200 to 0330 in English. Then they continue in Maltese to 0500, 15550 and 17570, the two frequencies used, and both are really excellent here for Sunday afternoon listening. And from the US, WINB Red Lion, Pennsylvania, they've come up with their latest schedule, which is 2000 to 2400 on 13790. And from midnight to 0600, they're on 11950.
And talking of Pennsylvania, it's never too early to mark your calendar and plan your vacation. For one of the best gatherings for shortwave listeners takes place each year at Culpsville, near Philadelphia in the USA.
The dates for the 1998 Winter Shortwave Listener Festival have now been confirmed as March the 12th to the 14th, 1998. Preliminary information can already be found at www.trsc.com. That's www.trsc.com. And more information will be posted as received.
Now here's a signal you don't pick up every day on the wireless.
This is Yerevan, the English service of the Voice of Armenia.
And the Senate has more details from the World Radio TV Handbook offices in Amsterdam.
WRTH recently received a letter from Armanag Sansarian, who runs the International Relations Bureau of the Voice of Armenia. Mr. Sansarian tells us that in December 1997, the station will celebrate its 50th anniversary. Now, telephone, fax and mail services in Armenia are very erratic at present, so they decided to conduct the 50th anniversary public relations campaign from Canada. Mr. Sansarian took early retirement from his job there to work for the Voice of Armenia, and in mid-October he'll be moving back to Yerevan. In the meantime, you can contact him at the following address: Voice of Armenia, International Relations Bureau, 6055 Balmoral, Brossard, spelled B-R-O-S-S-A-R-D, Quebec, J4Z2H5 in Canada. The phone and fax number is area code 514, then 445-6592, and if you're outside North America, remember to insert a 1 after your international access code.
Andy, I believe they have some broadcasts in English. Do you have the current schedule?
Yes, they have a daily 15-minute programme to the Middle East at 1745 UTC on 7480, 4990, and 4810 kHz on shortwave, and also on 864 kHz medium wave. To Europe and the Americas, they have a half-hour program in English starting at 2030 UTC, and that's on 9965 and 7480 kHz.
Thanks, Andy. Last week, as you may recall, Lou Josephs in Washington, D.C. said something controversial in reference to the launch of Internet's new Explorer. Yes, Lou used the term shortwave listening in the past tense.
Shortwave as we knew it, where you would spend time twiddling for a radio station to find, is almost gone, even though conditions are improving. I think with the technology that we have on the Internet.
Well, that woke some of you up to defend the cause for international radio listening. Mark Pipes in the USA writes,
"The problem with internet is that there's no DX. Where's the fun in hunting DX with a radio and antenna, battling the whims of the ionosphere, if you can get a clean feed over the telephone? The best part of shortwave listening is just like fishing. I listen to Media Network to tell me where the fishing holes are. Then I fire up one of the radios and go looking."
And Stephen Newlin in Elizabeth, South Australia says,
"To suggest soon everyone will be listening to their computer rather than a conventional shortwave radio for information and entertainment is like suggesting that instead of walking across the street to buy an ice cream, I'll fly across the street in a Boeing 747.
Well, the debate continues 2 weeks from now. In the meantime, have a sunny weekend.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. Some people get static. Some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network program. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.